descer pra ver filhos, filhos de Gandhi. Céu na terra é carnaval, manda descer pra ver filhos de Gandhi.
Baby. What? Why you following me? What are you doing? Why the hell you stand in front of me? I swear you just said you was done with me. You still out talking about what you gonna be. Need to get some money. I should've left you. I should've left you in 2016. I should've left you back in 2016. I should've left you back in 2016. They should've left you back in 2016.
Since 2014, cause they ain't wanna see a youngin' on a big screen. This shit ain't been the same since 2015. I lost a lot of people in 2016. The Lord told me they want men for me. These hoes won't get arrested from me. If I get locked down, would you send for me? She ain't go for you, but she went for me. Hey, look what you done to me. Remember when they used to make fun of me? I pull up black trucks and they run for me. Blue cheese in my pockets with a harness be. I ain't met a bitch yet, so she done with me. Bitch keep trying to show me her tongue ring. I'm a king, so she on to me. I still keep a stick like a pogo. You say you gon' rob me, that's a no-no. I still get them things in for the lolo. Yeah, we got more pumps than the golo. Long nights in the streets like a hobo. That nigga diss on me, he a homo. He claim he don't know me, but it's ho-no. The rap game ain't the same since Luffo. Since Luffo.
Why the hell you stand in front of me? I swear you just said you was done with me. You still out talking about what you gonna be. Need to get some money. I should've left you. I should've left you in 2016. I should've left you back in 2016. I should've left you back in 2016. They should've left you back in 2016.
Yeah. Fuck 2016, I'm a boss, I got sauce. Now she wanna strip tease. Man, I made it out the hundreds. I don't count blue things. I only drive big wings. All I drive is big wings. Hit the studio with your guy for 2016. We gon' leave all the rumors back in 2016. It must suck to be you. Got your girls in the legs piece. Baby girl say she 20, acting like she 16. Leave that baby flexion up in 2016. Down and blitzing all your babies, sliding in them Vegas. Got a donkey on your baby, can't believe it, real bliss. Merry Christmas, space jamming, swear I got about six rings.
Why the hell you stand in front of me? G, go somewhere, would you lose my number, please? You still out talking about what you gonna be. Need to get some money. I should've left you. I should've left you in 2016. I should've left you back in 2016. I should've left you back in 2016. They should've left you back in 2016. You are throwback with your old ass. Talking about we go back. You need to go back to whoever. I don't give a fuck away. The attitude to do it. Be your ass to it to do it. I ain't never let your ass know it. I ain't never let your ass, I ain't never let your ass, I ain't never let your ass know it. Why your ass working that same old tired ass job name? Find your ass and oh wait. Now I'm at a show your ass, should've walked by your ass. I ain't tryna find your ass, no way. Got too many bodies, you a throw it. Rest in peace of great David Bowie. Please can we get back friends? Please can we get back Kim? Both slice, sports world that they gave you life. Should've left your ass in the pen. Please can we get back Craig Sager? Leave your ass at the rim. 3 feet, no pressure, no press, no question. Actually, one simple question now. Why the hell you stand in front of me? I swear you just said you was done with me. You still out talking about what you gonna be. Need to get some money. I should've left you.
I should've left you. I should've left you. I should've left you. I should've left you. I should've left you. I should've left you.
Totally Irresponsible from WMFO in Medford. How's it going, everyone?
I'm doing great. How about you, Will?
I was challenged to put us live on air, so here we are.
I think by you challenged yourself.
I was challenged by you directly.
All right, you call me.
Yeah, I have it in writing that I was challenged.
Yeah, and Chris actually came up with a bit for this section, too.
The bit is called Challenging. Challenger. Challenger, I hardly know her. That's what the segment's called. The segment is called Challenger, I hardly know her. The segment is where Andrew does a cognitive or physical feat of spectacular proportions. And then we talk about it.
Well, I've just completed my physical feat.
What was your physical feat?
I just did it. I'm sorry that they can't see it.
You're... No.
Chris, you can't lie and say I didn't do it on air.
How dare you? William.
I saw it.
Yeah.
What did
it
you
definitely
do?
Definitely happened.
What did...
It's hard to explain.
It defies words.
It was the best pop and lock that you've ever seen in your life.
Well, if you're so hot, you can do it again.
There you go.
That was the worst pop and lock I've ever seen in my life. I have seen people in an iron lung who can pop and lock better than you. Too soon? That was like the 40s. That was like
I don't
the
know,
fort.
Chris.
What?
Oh, all right.
If anything, it is a commentary on how far we've come in our epidemiological understanding of disease outbreaks.
Oh, 100p.
Hundo P. Praise be. Praise be. Praise be to epidemiologists.
Oh yeah.
Praise be.
Thank God for them.
Have you seen the movie Contagion?
No.
That movie's so good. I mean, it's terrifying, but...
Have you seen It Follows?
Ooh, that one's a good
that
one.
That one's a good one.
Is that one about disease?
Yeah, STDs, yeah. Actually.
It's like, STIs,
it's a horror movie.
Actually?
It's like a... No, yes, term, I guess.
Yeah, stay woke, everybody.
Okay. It makes a difference if you get an STD and an STI.
Yeah, for sure.
So what is this movie?
It's just like an extended metaphor for... Like legit an STI, except the STI murders you.
Sounds like
some STIs do indeed do that. But this
yeah,
is just like more.
But it's embodied in a person this time.
Something like sus.
So there's like this STI where if you get it, there's a person that just follows you around very slowly. In an attempt to murder you.
Like creepingly.
Yeah,
slowly.
Yeah, very slowly. But if you have sex with someone, you give it to them, and this person then follows them instead.
What an ethical dilemma. That's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. So the first scene, correct me if I'm wrong, but the first scene is two people having sex, and him basically being like, yeah, sorry.
So that's very interesting. I say that... Because there is an anime, and I don't remember what it's called, but the premise is like an androgynous shadow demon or something follows this person.
Is it?
And there's a magic component. No, it's not really just yet, but it's the like being stalked by a like demon thing. If that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Happens to the best of us.
If I had a nickel. So, I don't know about you guys, but I drank so much water today, and I'm so hydrated.
Hydrate or dehydrate?
I'm just feeling great about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Any other substances that you've consumed today?
That's a good point. I also had a lot of carbs, because I had straight up, like, what's it called? Pancakes and syrup and orange juice. That's just sugar and carbs.
Isn't it weird that carbs are like so diverse between like sugar and like dietary? Okay, that's fine.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. What's up? What's up? No, I'm listening. I'm listening.
You've got like sugar and carbs, and you've also got like dietary fiber.
I'm not like a molecular chemist, so I don't know how to.
Have you ever looked at like the nutrition facts for literally anything?
I don't think that I have.
That's a lie. I don't believe you.
I mean, to see if it's vegan, but other than that...
Because you've got, like, sugar on one hand, and then you've got, like, things
sugar's
that are nothing...
Sugar's not an
like...
animal product.
I'm not saying that, Chris. I'm not attacking your veganism. I have other times to do that. Because I would love to, let me tell you.
Actually, random question. Wait, Andrew, were you into Pokemon, William? Like growing up?
Oh, hardcore.
Okay, were you? Okay.
Absolutely.
So, I love asking people this question. If I were a Pokemon gym leader, what type would I specialize in?
Let's see. Yo, I haven't played the games in forever.
Yeah, I think... I want to say... Oh, God, I'm conflicted between rock and water, but I'm gonna go with water. Yeah. Maybe electricity. But I think water. I'm gonna go with water. Yeah.
I'm feeling grass for some reason.
No.
Every person, no. Most people who I've asked this have said grass.
Yeah.
But I've also heard a lot of people say water, and I would prefer water. That would be cool.
Like
a nature-y one. Yeah. I could see like poison. And like it to like mess with people. Be like, ha. You just got
gotcha.
Chris. You just got Aragon.
Your name does not work well for that.
It does not, no. You just got Andrewed. All right, yeah, that works.
You just got savaged.
You just got Rick.
Like that's the, but yeah.
Have you seen Rick and Morty?
Yeah.
You just got Ricked, son.
Just say it with enough conviction, and then it works. That's all
you just
need.
Got Willed. Willed kind of works.
Yeah.
William?
No, Wilt.
Do you Wilt. You go by Will, correct? Okay. I learned from my mother that it is a power move to call people by their full name.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about, Christopher Ray Aragon.
Andrew Arthur. Andrew Tobias.
Wow.
Andrew.
You started with the right sound, not the right letter, but.
Andrew.
It's not R, though. It's
Theodore? It's something like old-timey.
It's Roger.
That's what it is.
Is that old-timey?
I only know one Roger, and he's the worst. So,
all right.
Roger Champagne, if you're out there, you're the worst, and everyone's talking about it.
Do tell.
He or went...
What's the hot gossip?
What's the hot gossip? Well, so this is all, like... from my middle school. So if you want to hear some hot like 2010 gossip,
oh, that's the
from
best
9 years ago.
Probably a little tepid by now, but we'll treat
tepid,
it as hot.
A little tepid. I heard that he kissed Michelle in the movie theater, and I did not cue up a song. Oh no. Oh geez. What am I gonna play? I'm gonna play.
Well, I heard Michelle kissed way too many guys in middle school.
Oh, me too.
It was not great. Is that all the gossip? Yeah, is that like actually the whole story? Okay.
I put on a lo-fi playlist. We can also turn on the mics whenever. I love lo-fi. Brady got me so into lo-fi. Anyway, so whenever we're bored, we can also turn off the microphones, but it's important that we all learn how to use them. Because then it makes the music louder. Observe.
Thank you. Potter and the Chamber of Secrets by J.K. Rowling. Read by Jim Dale. An unabridged performance brought to you by Pottermore from J.K. Rowling.
Chapter 1. The Worst Birthday. Not for the first time an argument had broken out over breakfast at No. 4 Privet Drive. Mr. Vernon Dursley had been woken in the early hours of the morning by a loud hooting noise from his nephew Harry's room. "Third time this week," he roared across the table. "If you can't control that owl, it'll have to go." Harry tried yet again to explain. "She's bored," he said. "She's used to flying around outside. If I could just let her out at night..." "Do I look stupid?" snarled Uncle Vernon, a bit of fried egg dangling from his bushy moustache. "I know what'll happen if that owl's let out." He exchanged dark looks with his wife, Petunia. Harry tried to argue back, but his words were drowned by a long, loud belch from the Dursleys' son, Dudley. "I want more bacon." "There's more in the frying pan, sweetums," said Aunt Petunia, turning misty eyes on her massive son. "We must build you up while we've got the chance. I don't like the sound of that school food." "Nonsense, Petunia. I never went hungry when I was at Smeltings," said Uncle Vernon heartily. "Dudley gets enough, don't you, son?" Dudley, who was so large his bottom drooped over either side of the kitchen chair, grinned and turned to Harry. "Pass the frying pan." "You've forgotten the magic word," said Harry irritably. The effect of this simple sentence on the rest of the family was incredible. Dudley gasped and fell off his chair with a crash that shook the whole kitchen. Mrs. Dursley gave a small scream and clapped her hands to her mouth. Mr. Dursley jumped to his feet, veins throbbing in his temples. "I meant please," said Harry quickly. "I didn't mean..." "What have I told you?" thundered his uncle, spraying spit over the table. "About saying the M-word in our house." "But I..." "How dare you threaten Dudley?" roared Uncle Vernon, pounding the table with his fist. I warned you. I will not tolerate mention of your abnormality under this roof." Harry stared from his purple-faced uncle to his pale aunt, who was trying to heave Dudley to his feet. "All right," said Harry. "All right." Uncle Vernon sat back down, breathing like a winded rhinoceros, and watched Harry closely out of the corners of his small, sharp eyes. Ever since Harry had come home for the summer holidays, Uncle Vernon had been treating him like a bomb that might go off at any moment, because Harry Potter wasn't a normal boy. As a matter of fact, he was as not normal as it is possible to be. Harry Potter was a wizard. A wizard fresh from his first year at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. And if the Dursleys were unhappy to have him back for the holidays, it was nothing to how Harry felt. He missed Hogwarts so much, it was like having a constant stomachache. He missed the castle with its secret passageways and ghosts, his classes, though perhaps not Snape, the potions master, the mail arriving by owl, eating banquets in the great hall, sleeping in his four-poster bed in the tower dormitory, visiting the gamekeeper Hagrid in his cabin next to the Forbidden Forest in the grounds, and especially Quidditch. Popular sport in the wizarding world. 6 tall goalposts, 4 flying balls, and 14 players on broomsticks. All Harry's spellbooks, his wand, robes, cauldron, and top-of-the-line Nimbus 2000 broomstick had been locked in a cupboard under the stairs by Uncle Vernon the instant Harry had come home. What did the Dursleys care if Harry lost his place on the house Quidditch team because he hadn't practiced all summer? What was it to the Dursleys if Harry went back to school without any of his homework done? The Dursleys were what wizards call muggles. Not a drop of magical blood in their veins. And as far as they were concerned, having a wizard in the family was a matter of deepest shame. Uncle Vernon had even padlocked Harry's owl, Hedwig, inside her cage to stop her from carrying messages to anyone in the wizarding world. Harry looked nothing like the rest of the family. Uncle Vernon was large and neckless, with an enormous black moustache. Aunt Petunia was horse-faced and bony. Dudley was blonde, pink, and porky. Harry, on the other hand, was small and skinny, with brilliant green eyes and jet-black hair that was always untidy. He wore round glasses, and on his forehead was a thin, lightning-shaped scar. It was this scar that made Harry so particularly unusual, even for a wizard. This scar was the only hint of Harry's very mysterious past, of the reason he had been left on the Dursleys' doorstep 11 years before. At the age of 1 year old, Harry had somehow survived a curse from the greatest dark sorcerer of all time, Lord Voldemort, whose name most witches and wizards still feared to speak. Harry's parents had died in Voldemort's attack, but Harry had escaped with his lightning scar, and somehow, nobody understood why, Voldemort's powers had been destroyed the instant he had failed to kill Harry. So Harry had been brought up by his dead mother's sister and her husband. He had spent 10 years with the Dursleys, never understanding why he kept making odd things happen without meaning to, believing the Dursleys' story that he had got his scar in the car crash that had killed his parents. And then, exactly a year ago, Hogwarts had written to Harry, and the whole story had come out. Harry had taken up his place at wizard school, where he and his scar were famous. But now the school year was over, and he was back with the Dursleys for the summer, back to being treated like a dog that had rolled in something smelly. The Dursleys hadn't even remembered that today happened to be Harry's 12th birthday. Of course, his hopes hadn't been high. They'd never given him a real present, let alone a cake. But to ignore it completely... At that moment, Uncle Vernon cleared his throat importantly and said, "Now, as we all know, today is a very important day." Harry looked up, hardly daring to believe it. "This could well be the day I make the biggest deal of my career," said Uncle Vernon. Harry went back to his toast. Of course, he thought bitterly, Uncle Vernon was talking about the stupid dinner party. He'd been talking of nothing else for 2 weeks. Some rich builder and his wife were coming to dinner, and Uncle Vernon was hoping to get a huge order from him. Uncle Vernon's company made drills. "I think we should run through the schedule one more time," said Uncle Vernon. "We should all be in position at 8 o'clock. Petunia, you will be in the lounge," said Aunt Petunia promptly, "waiting to welcome them graciously to our home." "Good, good. And Dudley?"
"I'll be waiting to open the door."
Dudley put on a foul, simpering smile.
"May I take your coats, Mr. and Mrs. Mason?" "They'll love him," cried Aunt Petunia rapturously.
"Excellent, Dudley," said Uncle Vernon. Then he rounded on Harry. "And you?" "I'll be in my bedroom, making no noise and pretending I'm not there," said Harry tonelessly.
"Exactly," said Uncle Vernon nastily. "I will lead them into the lounge, introduce you, Petunia, and pour them drinks. At 8:15, I'll announce dinner," said Aunt Petunia. "And Dudley, you'll say, 'May I take you through to the dining room, Mrs. Mason?'" said Dudley, offering his fat arm to an invisible woman.
"My perfect little gentleman," sniffed Aunt Petunia.
"And you?"
said Uncle Vernon viciously to Harry. "I'll be in my room, making no noise and pretending I'm not there," said Harry dully.
"Precisely. Now, we should aim to get in a few good compliments at dinner, Petunia. Any ideas?"
"Vernon tells me you're a wonderful golfer, Mr. Mason. Do tell me where you bought your dress, Mrs. Mason."
"Perfect, Dudley. How about... We had to write an essay about our hero at school, Mr. Mason, and I wrote about you."
This was too much for both Aunt Petunia and Harry. Aunt Petunia burst into tears and hugged her son, while Harry ducked under the table so they wouldn't see him laughing.
"And you, boy?"
Harry fought to keep his face straight as he emerged. "I'll be in my room, making no noise and pretending I'm not there," he said.
"Too right, you will," said Uncle Vernon forcefully. "The Masons don't know anything about you, and it's going to stay that way. When dinner's over, you take Mrs. Mason back to the lounge for coffee, Petunia, and I'll bring the subject around to drills. With any luck, I'll have the deal signed and sealed before the news at 10. We'll be shopping for a vacation home in Mallorca this time tomorrow."
Harry couldn't feel too excited about this. He didn't think the Dursleys would like him any better in Mallorca than they did on Privet Drive.
"Right. I'm off into town to pick up the dinner jackets for Dudley and me, and you,"
he snarled at Harry,
"you stay out of your aunt's way while she's cleaning."
Harry left through the back door.
It was a brilliant sunny day. He crossed the lawn, slumped down on the garden bench, and sang under his breath, "Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me." No cards, no presents, and he would be spending the evening pretending not to exist. He gazed miserably into the hedge. He had never felt so lonely. More than anything else at Hogwarts, more even than playing Quidditch, Harry missed his best friends, Ron Weasley and Hermione Granger. They, however, didn't seem to be missing him at all. Neither of them had written to him all summer, even though Ron had said he was going to ask Harry to come and stay. Countless times Harry had been on the point of unlocking Hedwig's cage by magic and sending her to Ron and Hermione with a letter, but it wasn't worth the risk. Underage wizards weren't allowed to use magic outside of school. Harry hadn't told the Dursleys this. He knew it was only their terror that he might turn them all into dung beetles that stopped them from locking him in the cupboard under the stairs with his wand and broomstick. For the first couple of weeks back, Harry had enjoyed muttering nonsense words under his breath and watching Dudley tearing out of the room as fast as his fat legs would carry him. But the long silence from Ron and Hermione had made Harry feel so cut off from the magical world that even taunting Dudley had lost its appeal. And now Ron and Hermione had forgotten his birthday. What wouldn't he give now for a message from Hogwarts, from any witch or wizard? He'd almost be glad of a sight of his archenemy, Draco Malfoy, just to be sure it hadn't all been a dream. Not that his whole year at Hogwarts had been fun. At the very end of last term, Harry had come face to face with none other than Lord Voldemort himself. Voldemort might be a ruin of his former self, but he was still terrifying, still cunning, still determined to regain power. Harry had slipped through Voldemort's clutches for a second time, but it had been a narrow escape, and even now, weeks later, Harry kept waking in the night, drenched in cold sweat, wondering where Voldemort was now, remembering his livid face, his wide, mad eyes. Harry suddenly sat bolt upright on the garden bench. He had been staring absent-mindedly into the hedge, and the hedge was staring back. Two enormous green eyes had appeared among the leaves. Harry jumped to his feet just as a jeering voice floated across the lawn. "I know what day it is," sang Dudley, waddling toward him. The huge eyes blinked and vanished. "What?" said Harry, not taking his eyes off the spot where they had been. "I know what day it is," Dudley repeated, coming right up to him. "Well done," said Harry. "So you finally learned the days of the week."
"Today's your birthday," sneered Dudley. "How come you haven't got any cards? Haven't you even got friends at that freak place?"
"Better not let your mum hear you talking about my school," said Harry coolly. Dudley hitched up his trousers, which were slipping down his fat bottom.
"Why are you staring at the hedge?" he said suspiciously.
"I'm trying to decide what would be the best spell to set it on fire," said Harry. Dudley stumbled backward at once, a look of panic on his fat face.
"You can't. Dad told you you're not to do magic. He said he'd chuck you out of the house, and you haven't got anywhere else to go. You haven't got any friends to take you."
"Jiggery pokery," said Harry in a fierce voice. "Hocus pocus, squiggly wiggly."
"Mom!"
howled Dudley, tripping over his feet as he dashed back toward the house.
"Mom, he's doing you know what."
Harry paid dearly for his moment of fun, as neither Dudley nor the hedge was in any way hurt. Aunt Petunia knew he hadn't really done magic, but he still had to duck as she aimed a heavy blow at his head with a soapy frying pan. Then she gave him work to do, with the promise he wouldn't eat again until he'd finished. While Dudley lolled around watching and eating ice cream, Harry cleaned the windows, washed the car, mowed the lawn, trimmed the flower beds, pruned and watered the roses, and repainted the garden bench. The sun blazed overhead, burning the back of his neck. Harry knew he shouldn't have risen to Dudley's bait, but Dudley had said the very thing Harry had been thinking himself. Maybe he didn't have any friends at Hogwarts. "Wish they could see famous Harry Potter now," he thought savagely as he spread manure on the flower beds, his back aching, sweat running down his face. It was 7:30 in the evening when at last, exhausted, he heard Aunt Petunia calling him.
"Get in here and walk on the newspaper."
Harry moved gladly into the shade of the gleaming kitchen. On top of the fridge stood tonight's pudding, a huge mound of whipped cream and sugared violets, A loin of roast pork was sizzling in the oven.
"Eat quickly. The masons will be here soon," snapped Aunt Petunia, pointing to two slices of bread and a lump of cheese on the kitchen table. She was already wearing a salmon-pink cocktail dress. Harry washed his hands and bolted down his pitiful supper. The moment he had finished, Aunt Petunia whisked away his plate. "Upstairs. Hurry!"
As he passed the door to the living room, Harry caught a glimpse of Uncle Vernon and Dudley in bow ties and dinner jackets. He had only just reached the upstairs landing when the doorbell rang, and Uncle Vernon's furious face appeared at the foot of the stairs.
"Remember, boy, one sound."
Harry crossed to his bedroom on tiptoe, slipped inside, closed the door, and turned to collapse on his bed. The trouble was, there was already someone sitting on it. Chapter 2. Dobby's Warning. Harry managed not to shout out, but it was a close thing. The little creature on the bed had large, bat-like ears and bulging green eyes the size of tennis balls. Harry knew instantly that this was what had been watching him out of the garden hedge that morning. As they stared at each other, Harry heard Dudley's voice from the hall.
"May I take your coats, Mr. and Mrs. Mason?"
The creature slipped off the bed and bowed so low that the end of its long, thin nose touched the carpet. Harry noticed that it was wearing what looked like an old pillowcase with rips for arm and leg holes.
Hello, said Harry nervously.
"Harry Potter,"
said the creature in a high-pitched voice Harry was sure would carry down the stairs.
"So long as Dobby wanted to meet you, sir. Such an honour it is."
Thank you, said Harry, edging along the wall and sinking into his desk chair next to Hedwig, who was asleep in her large cage. He wanted to ask, "What are you?" but thought it would sound too rude, so instead he said, "Who are you?"
"Dobby, sir. Just Dobby. Dobby the house elf," said the creature.
"Oh, really?" said Harry. I don't want to be rude or anything, but this isn't a great time for me to have a house elf in my bedroom."
Aunt Petunia's high, false laugh sounded from the living room. The elf hung his head.
"Not that I'm not pleased to meet you," said Harry quickly, "but, is there any particular reason you're here?"
"Oh, yes, sir," said Dobby earnestly. "Dobby has come to tell you, sir. It is difficult, sir. Dobby wonders where to begin."
"Sit down," said Harry politely, pointing at the bed.
To his horror, the elf burst into tears, very noisy tears.
Sit down, he wailed. "Never, never, ever."
Harry thought he heard the voices downstairs falter.
"I'm sorry," he whispered. "I didn't mean to offend you or anything."
"Offend Dobby," choked the elf. "Dobby has never been asked to sit down by a wizard like an equal."
Harry, trying to say shh and look comforting at the same time, ushered Dobby back onto the bed where he sat hiccuping, looking like a large and very ugly doll. At last he managed to control himself and sat with his great eyes fixed on Harry in an expression of watery adoration. "You can't have met many decent wizards," said Harry, trying to cheer him up. Dobby shook his head. Then, without warning, he leapt up and started banging his head furiously on the window, shouting,
"Bad Dobby! Bad Dobby!" "Don't! What are you doing?" Harry hissed, springing up and pulling Dobby back onto the bed.
Hedwig had woken up with a particularly loud screech and was beating her wings wildly against the bars of her cage.
"Dobby had to punish himself, sir," said the elf, who had gone slightly cross-eyed. "Dobby almost spoke ill of his family, sir."
"Your family?"
"The wizard family Dobby serves, sir. Dobby is a house elf, bound to serve one house and one family forever."
"Do they know you're here?" asked Harry curiously. Dobby shuddered.
"Oh, no, sir, no. Dobby will have to punish himself most grievously for coming to see you, sir. Dobby will have to shut his ears in the oven door for this. If they ever knew, sir."
"But won't they notice if you shut your ears in the oven door?"
"Dobby doubts it, sir. Dobby is always having to punish himself for something, sir. They let Dobby get on with it, sir. Sometimes they reminds me to do extra punishments."
"But why don't you leave? Escape?"
"A house elf must be set free, sir, and the family will never set Dobby free. Dobby will serve the family until he dies, sir."
Harry stared. "And I thought I had it bad staying here for another 4 weeks," he said.
This makes the Dursleys sound almost human. Can't anyone help you? Can't I? Almost at once, Harry wished he hadn't spoken. Dobby dissolved again into wails of gratitude. Please, Harry whispered frantically, please be quiet. If the Dursleys hear anything, if they know you're here.
Harry Potter asks if he can help Dobby. Dobby has heard of your greatness, sir, but of your goodness, Dobby never knew.
Harry, who was feeling distinctly hot in the face, said, whatever you've heard about my greatness is a load of rubbish. I'm not even top of my year at Hogwarts. That's Hermione. She... But he stopped quickly, because thinking about Hermione was painful.
Harry Potter is humble and modest, said Dobby reverently, his orb-like eyes aglow. Harry Potter speaks not of his triumph over he who must not be named.
Voldemort, said Harry. Dobby clapped.